These are the stories that you need to know about today. Canada is standing its ground, does not give in to Washington. You're going to hear this for yourself. NATO is looking for its purpose, its direction, its mission. I'll tell you what its real mission is right now. And the former MAGA congresswoman says the Trump White House is provoking a civil war in America. Blames the Democrats for the same thing, by the way. This is the Sanchez effect. Let's do this. Hello again, everybody. I'm Rick Sanchez, and this is The Effect. You know, as a journalist, I can tell you that what makes any story a news story legitimately is usually one word: change. When something changes, right, when it alters, it's news. Today, the change involves several places, several institutions, and several people. The first, the Prime Minister of Canada, was publicly reprimanded by Mr. Trump for his anti-hegemony, anti-U.S. comments at Davos. Mr. Trump disinvited him from being on the Gaza Peace Board. And then Mr. Trump went even further. So he calls Carney on the phone, right? Mark Carney, to talk about what he said in Davos. In case you don't know, what Carney said in Davos is that what most were afraid to say. He basically said, yeah, taking Greenland would not be good. It's wrong, but so is what happened in a dozen other countries before this. He essentially said the New World Order, or as some call it, the hegemony that is run by the United States and Europe and has been for a long time, he says it's bullcrap, it's a lie.
The rules-based order is fading. We knew the story of the international rules-based order was partially false. That the strongest would exempt themselves when convenient, that trade rules were enforced asymmetrically. And we knew that international law applied with varying rigor depending on the identity of the accused or the victim. This fiction was useful, so we placed the sign in the window. We participated in the rituals, and we largely avoided calling out the gaps between rhetoric and reality. This bargain no longer works.
Let's go back to the conversation with Mr. Trump now, who does this kind of thing all the time. I mean, he's a master at it. It's his strategy. He wants to control the narrative, to create his own truth, so to speak, right? So here's what he does. Trump calls Carney, talk about the Davos speech, where Carney broke from Washington's rules-based order, et cetera, et cetera. Trump is hoping that during this call, Carney will say, I'm so sorry I said that. I have changed my mind. So look at what Trump does instead. As soon as the call ends, the White House announces to the media that Carney has changed his mind, that he no longer believes that, that he's taken it all back. This is right out of Trump's playbook to control the narrative, which usually works because people are often too respectful or too frightened. My God, they were just in the Oval Office talking to the president, or in this case, on the phone with the president. So they're afraid to say that the president is not telling the truth or that the president is wrong and that they're going to stick to their guns. But the prime minister goes ahead and does just that. He refutes Trump. In fact, when he's told that Trump has mischaracterized their discussion, he comes out and says, no. I stand behind everything I said in Davos, and I'll continue making deals with countries around the world with or without Washington's permission.
Bessent says that you walked back your comments on Davos in a conversation with Mr. Trump. Is that the case, Prime Minister?
To be absolutely clear, and I said this to the president, I meant what I said in Davos. It was clear it was a broader set of issues, that Canada was the first country to understand the change in U.S. trade policy.
So how big a deal is this? Here's why I'm putting emphasis on it, right? Let's talk about this. What Mr. Carney is doing and saying is more significant than who wins the gotcha game between him and Mr. Trump. What's important is that he is signaling publicly a break away from the hegemony. And here's why. Remember when Biden and the EU punished Russia with crazy sanctions, the freezing, theft of hundreds of billions of their money, their assets in banks, and then disallowed Russians from conducting any banking activity or trading even with other countries or even being able to use U.S. dollars? So what happened when all of those castigatory measures went into effect? Russia found a way to survive. Not only survive, hell, Russia found a way to prosper. See, other countries saw that, right? They thought to themselves, well, maybe we too can now do the same thing. And they did. In their own ways, they all kind of stood up and showed defiance. China, Brazil, South Africa, India, they seemed to be fortified by Russia's example. So what those countries did was noteworthy, certainly newsworthy. I told you about it at the time, that the world was kind of changing as it was happening. But see, those are not Washington's allies, right? Canada is. That's why what is happening now, what Canada's doing now, is more than just noteworthy or newsworthy. It's a game changer. Canada's not in BRICS. It's not in the global south. It's right in the belly of the beast. It's part of the hegemony. Hell, Canada's our neighbor in America, right? Right next to the United States. And that's why what they're doing is more than just defiance. It's a breakaway. It's saying and now proving old rules, they no longer apply. New rules need to be established. And you know what? Think about it, because there's a lot more coming after this. What he just did, what he just signaled, that's a bad sign for the U.S. dollar, for the U.S. banking system, which, you know, some economists I talk to tell me they're already on their last leg. Here's another sign of change. Change, it's a happening, right? NATO is trying to decide what its purpose is. Do we move forward with the United States or without the United States? What are we? Who are we? What are we doing here, right? Of course, as expected, NATO Chief Mark Rutte used this meeting where they were trying to come up with these answers to say exactly what he thinks Washington wants to hear.
If anyone thinks here, again, that the European Union or Europe as a whole can defend itself without the US, keep on dreaming. You can't. We can't. We need each other. For Europe, if you really want to go it alone, and those of you who are planning for that, forget that you can ever get there with 5%. It will be 10%. You have to build up your own nuclear capability. That costs billions and billions of euros. You will lose then, in that scenario, you would lose the ultimate guarantor of our freedom, which is the US nuclear umbrella. So, good luck.
He said a lot there, and it's important. That 10% figure got me. So, did you hear what he said in totality? First of all, he's promising freedom. Freedom from whom? What he's doing is a gangster move. You know what is? You know what he's doing? It's called extortion. What the Gambinos call the protection racket. They've done it for years. Rutte just spelled it out. He's telling you, if you live in Europe and you're listening to the sound of my voice, that you may soon need to give him 10% of your wages. And in return, he will protect you. He'll make sure you're okay. And by the way, if you don't like that deal and you disagree publicly because you don't want to give up 10% of your money, of your tax dollars, he'll show up at your door and they'll threaten you. This is happening right now, especially in the UK, with people who disagree with the EU and NATO. This is called extortion. By the way, you want to know what question Rutte and his team should be asking? It's not, what should we become? What should we do now? Should we zig or should we zag? No. The question that NATO needs to be asking itself is, why do we exist? Seriously, why does NATO even exist? Think about this for a minute. NATO was formed to stop the Soviet Union. Never mind that it was the Soviet army that saved every single country in NATO from Hitler. We'll move beyond that and just accept the fact that the Soviets were bad, so bad that NATO had to defend Europe from them and protect Europe from them, right? Okay. Now, headline. Hello, McFly, knock, knock. The Soviet Union doesn't exist anymore. Your enemy is gone. In fact, starting in 2001 and on other occasions since, the Russian president, the guy who's there now, right, has expressed on several occasions. I was there when he said this recently. I was in the room, right? He said he wants to join NATO. He's telling them, you win. You no longer have to oppose me. I want to be on your team.
Our country, striving to eliminate the grounds for bloc confrontation and to create a common security space, has twice expressed its readiness to join NATO. The first time was in 1954, during the Soviet era, and the second time was in 2000, during President Clinton's visit. Both times, we were effectively rejected right off the bat. When we spoke with Mr. Clinton, he said, you know, it's interesting. I think it's possible. But then later that evening, he said, I consulted with my team. It's unrealistic.
So ask yourself, given all of that, why does NATO still exist? Seriously, why? Why do you think? I'll tell you what I think. Is it really about the defense of Europe? Come on. Of course not. It's about money. And who are they defending? They're defending the bankers and the war profiteers who feed off of continued aggression, even when it's not even necessary. And when I say continued aggression, I mean continued aggression. Freedom loving? Give me a break. Seriously? NATO doesn't prevent wars. More often than not, they start wars. Look at this. Look at this. That's Belgrade, right? That's Baghdad. This is Kabul. This is Sana'a. This is Tripoli. This is Damascus. Those are all capitals of countries attacked, bombed, shelled by NATO. Many of those without cause. Here's another story. Remember at the top of the show, I talked about what makes news, right? What makes a news story a news story? What makes a news story a news story is change. And here's another one for you. More change. This time in my country, the United States of America, a newsmaker who has always been 100% behind President Trump, has always identified 100% with MAGA, has always wanted, quote, illegal aliens deported. She's changed. Former Congresswoman Marjorie Taylor Greene is calling the Trump administration and the MAGA movement, she's calling them out for hypocrisy. Yeah. She's even suggesting that they're trying to provoke or could provoke a civil war. And her point is about a bit of a double standard here. So she's blaming both parties. If there's one thing that has always been important to the Trump MAGA movement, it's the defense of the Second Amendment, the right that Americans should be able to have and bear arms. For example, they scoffed at the Democrats for calling armed protesters, these people right here who protested and attacked the Capitol on January 6th, terrorists. And they did the same anytime any person in the media, especially the mass media, the liberal media, criticized any American for legally carrying a firearm. But now, when this nurse, this ICU nurse, protests ICE and is shot and killed, and he happened to have a firearm legally hidden under his waistband, Trump officials are saying, well, he's a terrorist for having a gun.
The White House has labeled the man who was killed in Minnesota as a domestic terrorist. Is that something you agree with? And have you seen any evidence to back up that claim?
When you perpetuate violence against a government because of ideological reasons and for reasons to resist and perpetuate violence, that is the definition of domestic terrorism. This individual who came with weapons and ammunition to stop a law enforcement operation of federal law enforcement officers committed an act of domestic terrorism. That's the facts.
I'm not sure what ideological means, but I will tell you this. because he had a gun, he's a terrorist? Did the rules change? Is it now the Trump administration actively doing away with the Second Amendment? Can they be, can they suddenly be accused of that? By the way, what kind of chaos might that cause?
Both sides need to take off their political blinders. You are all being incited into civil war, yet none of it solves any of the real problems that we all face. And tragically, people are dying.
So today we've spoken in class about what? Change. It's happening all over the world. And in many ways, it's positive. In many ways, it makes us wonder maybe what direction we should take. Legal and media analyst Lionel joins me now to talk about this very thing, this change, these things that are taking place all over the world. Lionel and I have had a long time relationship, and it is so good, I must say, as a friend, as a colleague, and as someone I respect, to be able to see him once again. How are you, Lionel?
I'm doing great, and as we say in West Tampa, oye, como anda? You know, Rick, may I clarify one thing you said?
Of course.
I love the word change. She reminds me of Obama, hope and change. And people voted for him because they hoped he didn't change. But you know, Rick, what most Americans and most people around the world want is not change, but improvement. If I said, Mr. Sanchez, your tumor has changed. Oh, that's good. Not necessarily. So what we're doing right now is we're seeing one of the most incredible Greek dramas ever. And it's so wonderful to hear you apply your, I think, very astute and accurate view of what's going on. And I will give you my version of somebody in the trenches, in the fishbowl, here in this parallel universe called the United States, and vis-a-vis the people who watch news and think they know what's going on.
Okay, so we've got three topics today that I've hit.
Good.
I talked about Carney, talked about Ruta. What an interesting guy he is. And then we talked to Marjorie Taylor Greene. Let's go ahead and start in the order in which I presented him. What do you make of Carney? I find this guy, he's a fascinating cat. The fact that he would say the things he's saying, which really is a bit of a breakaway statement that he's making, how significant is that? And might it lead to the first signs of a breakaway within the hegemony?
Well, first of all, the most wonderful thing you could ever, and again, I'm speaking as somebody who is commenting and analyzing the president and this iteration of MAGA, dumb, or whatever you want to call it. Mm-hmm. The best thing you could ever say to the president is that you're a hegemon. The United States is a hegemon. He says, yeah, damn right we are, because we're exerting influence and control over the world.
Yeah.
Thank you. Say it again.
Yeah.
It's the greatest words ever. That's number one. Number two, as you know, it's interesting. The word carny is a slang in this country for carnival, which is the language of professional wrestling. And what you're seeing right now is babyface and heel. This is classic. It is so perfect. Behind the scenes, he is showing Trump, too, can play that game, because Trump loves rhetoric. Mm-hmm. And Carney said, I never backed down. Oh, yes, you did. I did not. Because let me tell you something. Trump's thinking, you know what? After Trudeau, very good. I like your style. I'll give you a little bit. You give me a little bit. Because tomorrow, Rick, it all changes. Whatever you hear is one thing about Trump. It's like the weather in Florida. If you like it now, 15 minutes is going to change. So that's today. So it was good. It was nice. What does it mean? Nothing.
Yeah, well, I'm going to hit you back on two points. The one about
Please.
Trump liking rhetoric, you're absolutely right. If you read Michael Cohen's book, which I'm sure you did.
that rag.
It was actually an interesting book. He knows Trump as well as anybody knows Trump. And whether he's BSing or not. Well, he was with Trump a lot. So his point is, everything Trump would do the first time he was running for president was ask this question, first thing in the morning, before they had their breakfast. How can I become the front page story in the New York Times today? And how can I be the lead story on CNN? That's it. So for Trump, in many ways, this to your point, I'm agreeing with you. This argument between him and Carney is actually a great thing because it's a headline story. It's two guys battling it out. I agree with you. I'll give you that. He prefers that over Trudeau. Good?
Good, but he doesn't want headlines for the sake of leadership. He just doesn't want to be in the news. He wants to be winning, and I guarantee you, Rick, you and I are from the same generation. In our lifetime, we've never seen anything like Trump.
Of course
not.
And
I don't mean good or bad. I'm just saying we thought Reagan was good. Reagan was minorly compared to this.
So, yeah, but what we're saying is he's a bit of a showman. He knows how to play it.
Yes.
He's great at the theatrics. Okay,
yes.
Granted, let's move on to what might matter. And this is what's important. Mr. Carney is saying something. I don't remember, at least in my era, somebody from the West saying that the rules-based order bullcrap about how can you possibly want to take Greenland? That would be horrible. You can't, one country can't take another country. While we know what happened in Iraq, we know what happened in Afghanistan, we know what happened in Syria, we know what happened in Libya. And this is what Carney is saying. And I'm saying, yeah, we've all said that. You've said that. I've said that. But to hear the Canadian prime minister say that is a game changer. How am I wrong?
It's a game changer because he's not in a coma like his predecessor. Look, Rick, one of the things which is most wonderful about this whole Davos business is you had two things, Larry Fink and Lutnick basically telling them, it's over with. Globalism is dead. You're through. It's finished. Follow that up with Trump. Did you see, let's talk about body language and posture. When he gets up there, when he leans into the mic, it's like, oh, baby, I'm running this. And he even slams Macron in the glasses. I mean, he is beautiful. Now, if I am right near Times Square. If I walked up and said, here's $1,000. Anybody know what rules-based order is? They said, no. Anybody know what a hegemony is or hegemony?
No.
Because Americans, let me tell you something, Rick. Don't kid yourself. Americans say, it's about time that we act tough. You go ahead and do
but
it.
But that's
politics. Even though theoretically.
This is where you and I always have this problem. And that's why I love you like a brother. And I feel like you and I are sitting in a coffee shop.
Butt.
Or I do have a butt. I'm Cuban, a big butt. but what you're talking about is politics and process. And what I want to talk about are real effects. No, you're right. An American doesn't know what a hegemony is. An American doesn't know what BRICS is. An American doesn't know a lot of these topics that so-called pseudo-intellectuals like you and I have a discussion about. But I'll tell you what Americans do know. They know the value of the U.S. dollar and they understand inflation. And if the United States, because of its actions, our country, my country, and I'm not talking about Trump here, I'm talking about some that started with Obama and Clinton and the whole rest of them, continues down the path of weaponizing our ability to control banking and control currency, then Americans will face something they've never faced in my lifetime and yours. And that is the devaluation of America's dollar, because these other countries, not just the Carneys of the world, will all get together and say, we're going to set up something else and bypass these sons of guns. That's what I'm talking about. That is a game changer.
Rick, they will agree with you, but they do not necessarily correlate or connect the devaluation of the dollar with what's going on right now, because they don't even understand what Davos is. Look, for the first time, Mr. Mini-Me and eating bugs is gone. The globalists are through. And let me say something to you, mi hermano, as we say, my brother. It's all politics. Everything is politics.
Of course.
Everything. Power is one thing. And nobody, for whatever it's worth, because let me tell you, there's a lot of stuff going on in this country right now, as you know and you alluded to, regarding Minnesota and others. So it's nice for the president to say, I can still exert pressure over the world. As far as Minneapolis, a different story. But let me tell you something. It was masterful. And I got to say something to Mr. Carney. I thought he was terrific. What he said, I didn't back down. Yes, you did. No, I didn't. It was great. And let me tell you something. It's a good day for Canada to hold their head up, because after that prior, whatever that was, they need to get a little backbone again. And I think they're happy.
Well, what I'm saying
is, Trump will accommodate.
But what I'm saying is, what wins the day politically, and I agree with you, a lot of this stuff wins the day politically, does not win the timeline, does not in the end
necessarily
make it a better situation for us Americans in the future, at least not in terms of our economics, our spending power, et cetera, et cetera. That's the point that I fear.
Well, I think that is axiomatic. Absolutely. Of course.
So let's talk now about Europe, because that's really what we were alluding to here. This guy Rutte stands up the other day and he has a meeting with the other. And by the way, Rutte is a fascinating character as well. I mean, this guy looks like he was picked out of Hollywood. And he knows he is. Right. Every time I hear him talk, I feel like he was in front of a mirror a half hour before rehearsing his lines. But that may be a little unfair, and I apologize for saying so. Nonetheless, I digress. This guy, Rutte, and these guys in the NATO consortium are having a meeting, and they're trying to decide what the hell they're going to do now. Trump is basically poo-pooing them and saying, I don't need you guys anymore. And if you want to pay me enough money, fine, I'll help you. Otherwise, go to hell. You know, that's essentially what I think they're hearing from Trump. They're freaked out. They don't know what to do. And they're trying to decide what they're going to be or become. Meanwhile, the only reason they exist, as I said moments ago, is because they were a consortium that was formed to stop a country that no longer exists.
So, precisely. Well,
it looks like, it's like a Fellini movie, what's going on here. Your advice, right. If you were Ruta, what would you do? Oh.
You're talking about the raison d'etre, you know, what are we doing here? It's interesting how, because the motto of Russia, excuse me, of NATO should be, you know, no Russia, no NATO. It doesn't exist because Americans are saying NATO's going to help us. You know, Finland, what are you talking right. about? And I love, Rick, you mentioned something which is interesting. When Mr. Putin said, hey, can we join NATO? No, you can't get out. He said, excuse me. You said this was an agreement with the Soviet Union. We're not the Soviet Union. We'll be gone. Remember in 1990 when Mr. Gorbachev was told, you know, now one foot to the east?
Yeah.
Remember that? And he said, hey, what about this? You know what they told him? You know what the response was? Excuse me. We made a deal with the Soviet Union. There is no Soviet Union. You're Russia. And he said, what? What are you talking? Okay, fine. Okay, now that the Soviet Union is gone, let me talk Russia to Russia. Can we join the EU? Can we join NATO? No. Why? We'll think of something. Nobody understands what this is for. Nobody, I mean, seriously. And they're talking about, and you mentioned before about the Gambino or the organized crime reference.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, Rick, NATO is like me selling you a potion against vampires. And I charge you $100 and you wear this thing and you say, I want my money back. I said, it works. Have you seen any vampires lately? No. That's what this is. It's like Russia has an attack. And Mr. Putin says, attack. I was the one who met with Mr. Zelensky and we were going to work things out until Bojo Boris Johnson came along. What are you talking about? It's like, what parallel universe are you working on? I mean, this is name the reality.
Yeah. Well, you didn't see any vampires, did you? Give me $50. Fascinating. I do think in the end that the Europeans, my experience now, talking amano amano, as we say, my experience lately traveling throughout Europe and, of course, being back home with Suzanne and the kids for the holidays is that Americans are much more accepting of the Russian perspective than the Europeans are. When I was home and, you know, people were talking to me, hell, when I went through immigration and customs, the guy wanted to take a picture. He wanted to ask me about Russia. What's it like? You know, what are you doing? And et cetera, et cetera. And they were curious, right? Whereas when I went to through airports in Europe and I got into conversations with people, you know, waiting for the plane at the gate, they wanted to fight me because what are you doing? Oh, yeah, I'm working. I'm a journalist. I'm working in what? You're working for Putin? It's like, no. It really, I find the European mindset on this to be almost obsessive. Is that the right word?
I'm going to tell you something that you and I would recognize. We were, same generation, post-Cold War, right during the time of when everybody was worried about Castro. And do you remember Boris and Natasha, the cartoon?
Yes.
We're still living
with Canadian.
You, little squirrel. There is this mentality. They're living in a time that doesn't exist anymore. It doesn't exist. And I never thought that I would be looking at, you know, in the old days, it's like, you know, Russia does this, and you can look at this, and the bread lines, and they knock on the door, and they, you know where this draconian, this dare I say, Stasi or, quote, KGB-like Soviet? It's in Europe!
Yeah.
People being pulled out of their homes because they posted something? I remember the old expression, when Europe sneezes, we get a cold. Well, we're going to get pneumonia with this. And what's interesting is that, you see how it just changed? We don't look to Russia anymore for draconian excesses. We look to the UK, Keir Starmer. We can't believe, and I'm telling my fellow Americans here, this is a beta test. This isn't just going to stop there. They want to do this here because Rick, it is a new world order, but not the new world and not the order they had ever anticipated. It's a different world. It's an inversion. And going back to your original theme of this, there is change, and it's not necessarily improvement.
Yeah. Yeah, no, and I think that leads us to Marjorie Taylor Greene, because I think, first of all, I'm impressed with her. I consider myself, first of all, I'm a journalist, so I have to be independent. I have to think in terms of both parties. I think the Democrats are full of crap, generally speaking, and some of the things that they have stood for in the Biden administration.
You're being kind.
Of course. But I also am critical of much of what the new Trump administration has done. I think in many ways they, too, have sold out to the war profiteers, and these guys who are making too many decisions. And I like Marjorie Taylor Greene, disagree with the way that this removal of illegal immigrants is being handled. I think it looks reckless, careless, unorganized, and just not smart. And that's not what America should be showing the world, my opinion.
She's a phony. She's a person who stepped down from Congress, and what she's doing is she's auditioning for The View, and she's telling her WME or her agent, listen, I can play both sides. Let me tell you what, there's a thing in this country people are forgetting. It's illegals attempting to be removed. What you are seeing in Minnesota is anarchy, Antifa. Now, you can call it terrorism. You can use whatever you want to call it. She's trying to play both sides against the middle. And let me tell you something. What she's going to find out is that once she loses Congress, nobody gives a rat's you-know-what about MTG and her brilliance. This was her chance. Why she left? I'm thinking, wait a minute. Something's up there. But that's me. I'm Mr. Conspiracy. That there's something wrong, because once you leave that position of power, your negotiating stance goes out the door. She is trying to rediscover herself. Just like, you know, we had Dan Bongino, who was the assistant executive of the FBI. Yeah. He went back into podcasting. That's where the authority is. So she's playing both sides against the middle. And go back, by the way, and read that. Read what her statement is. It doesn't say anything. It's illusory. You know, when you say, and I believe, and by the way, there's never going to be a civil war in this country.
But isn't she right?
You know who the
but
people
wait a minute.
In this...
But she's right, Lionel. You can't... The Kristi Noem basically came out and said, this guy's a terrorist because he had a gun. That wasn't even displayed. That's exactly what the Democrats were saying that
Rick,
people like you were complaining about.
Rick. Kristi Noem ain't long for this world. You know what I mean? Kristi, don't buy the green bananas. You know what I mean? And even Trump realized, he goes, okay, because let me tell you something. I don't know. You said about, nobody said you can't carry a gun. We have a Second Amendment right. We have this wonderful thing called the Constitution. But you can't bring a gun to a bank robbery either. So yeah. That's ridiculous. But the thing is, don't get caught up in the rhetoric, because everybody right now, they want to be the star. Want to be, and as far as MTG goes, she's through.
Okay, well, let me tell you something else she said that I completely agree with her on. She's complained about the fact that Israel is calling the shots in the United States. I think she's right.
Wow. Alert the media. She really went out on a limb on that one.
Well, heard any other Congress people say that? Have you heard any other U.S. senators come out and criticize Israel? When?
Oh, Matt. Well, very, very.
Massey?
Put it this way.
Massey?
It's a very small club.
Yes.
But let me explain something. If you really want to get and talk about people who control the Congress, don't stop with Israel. Let's go to big tech. They own everything. And before that, it was Big Agra. So the idea we have, and it's Citizens United on steroids.
But they're not a foreign country.
I don't know.
But they're not a foreign country, Lionel. They're okay, fine. There's too many billionaires and who have too much power,
right.
Not only in the U.S., but in every country probably. But when a country this small is telling a country this big what the hell to do, we got a problem.
Well, I'll tell you what, the argument's been made, and I am not going to argue with this at this point, but let me go back to what I said. This is a country. Big tech, however, is the world. Now, let me explain something to you. Let's see how far she does. She is going to take anything that she thinks attracts the left, because most of the people that she's trying to deal with, namely The View and
yeah.
that type of ilk, she's going to say, pretty soon she's going to be drinking, well, collecting her own rainwater and drinking raw milk. She'll say whatever she has to do. Let me tell you what people are worried about in this country. It's not that. I want to say something with all due respect, and I love you. What you're hearing right now, folks of the world, this is a very cerebral, rarefied discussion between two. What did you call me? A pseudo-intellectual?
We're both pseudo-intellectuals. Because
anybody
who goes around calling themselves an intellectual, I got a problem with. But
right. But what we're doing is most people aren't there at all. This is TV talk. We're talking about this stuff. When it comes down to real, real bread and butter stuff, the issues, nobody's worried about that here. And you could say it is important. Absolutely. You and I can think of 10 things, rule-based order, global this way. No, but that's fine. But remember one thing. There will be a day of reckoning. There will be a day of reckoning regarding a variety of issues. But I want to leave you with one thing regarding this.
All right.
This goes for humankind. Humans can handle three issues at a time. Don't kid yourself. And you got to make the issues very, very simple and very, very connected. You can't talk about rarefied things such as, the rule. No, that's not it. Marjorie Taylor Greene is trying to break away from whatever it was she was. And Rick, and I know. You have, for example, you've been very successful in journalism and television and, mm-hmm. and the communication arts because you have a brand, the Rick Sanchez brand. And you don't go from one day you're this and the next day you're this and then back. No, because we want consistency. It's like McDonald's. Mm-hmm. You may not like McDonald's, but by God, you can walk into anyone in the world and that's what you get. There's something about consistency, right or wrong, that the moment you veer from that, you lose because you lose the group you had and you're never in with the group you're trying to get. And that is reality, my friend. Mm. And what also is what we're talking about right now, let the world know it's a brand new world. These platforms of citizen, civilian, alternative and foreign platforms, because here I know you know this, probably talking to your colleagues here in New York. The mainstream media, the sock puppet heretics, these absolute proxies, they're dead. Starting with CBS armed down.
So what I'm saying is
this is it. This is cutting edge. And the thing is, we can cut through a variety of issues, but bottom line, every issue has to hit somebody viscerally. Or it's a waste of time. I don't care what country you're in.
Will you be mad at me as my friend if I tell you that I have an invitation out to Marjorie Taylor Greene to come on the show? Are you okay if I have a conversation?
I think you'd be a fool not to. I think you'd be a fool not to.
So.
And put me on with her. And I'll tell her the same thing I'm telling you. Let me tell you something.
You're booked.
I love this. I love talking to people about this. This isn't personal. There's one thing about, you aside from that comment about the NATO's looks, we don't get personal. As we said in The Godfather, it's business, Sonny.
Yeah.
It's not personal. It's business. And that's what this is. And that's the beautiful part about this. We're not getting it. I hate when people reduce, and I'm telling you, so much of politics is how do people look? What do they sound like? Yeah. Are they fat? I mean, it's the most ridiculous thing. But it is so wonderful to see what's happening. But remember, take this conversation we're having right now, put it in a time capsule, and remember what I'm saying. Take everything regarding Trump right now, forget it. Tomorrow's completely different.
Yeah.
You could argue this all day long. When you saw those folks walk out, when the world walked out of Davos, you know what they're saying with your interpreters? What the hell just happened? What happened? Do we win? Who is? What's going on here?
I love the way you have been able to put us in the moment of what is being perceived at this time. And you're so good at that because if there's one thing about you, Lionel, is you're always a good read, You've got a good read generally on people and places at the time. And it's nice to be able to add that perspective. I'm trying to get a big macro approach to where the world is going, which is why we analyze these things every day. And you kind of bring us back to earth a little bit, which is why I've so much enjoyed this conversation. You are mi amigo, tampeño to my ameño. I hope you and the family and everything is fine, my friend. Hope you're well.
My best to you and yours. Happy New Year, my friend. Let's talk again. Please make it soon. Make it soon.
I love you like a brother. Be good. Take care. Legal
Indeed,
and media
sir.
Analyst.
Thank you.
Lionel. All right, so let's do this now. I recently reported that the EU, you may have remembered this, I put it out on my podcast, et cetera, the EU and NATO's seeming collapse is actually strengthening the ties between China and India, for example, as well as with Russia. Well, the reaction to this was kind of amazing. We start with X Cali, who says, India and China's population size is over 3 billion. EU, bye-bye. Okay, but here comes Gary D. Lewis, who disagrees. He says, Europe can get plenty of gas from non-Russian sources. Russia, on the other hand, is desperate for anybody to buy their gas. Mr. Lewis, I got something for you. If Europe is, as you say, a continent that can get its gas anywhere, why then are they paying twice as much now for Russian gas being diverted through other countries? Riddle me that, Batman. Pest says, Rick, perfect journalism. Always a pleasure to hear facts and logic. Ooh, how nice. Namaste. I'm just being honest, says, BRICS and the SCO are a toothless lion. This grouping is not a military alliance. Wait a minute. There, I'm just being honest. Actually, I checked, and you know what? They are. The standing armies, when you add them all up alone, of the BRICS countries and the Global South communities, represent three times, almost three times, the size of Europe and the United States' standing armies combined. The count comes out to somewhere between 16,000 to 17,000 on the BRICS and Global South community. That's about, oh, pardon me, I said 1,000. I meant million. Thank you. About 16 to 17 million on the BRICS and Global South, 6 million roughly for the Europeans in the U.S. So I think your numbers are wrong. But thank you, of course, for commenting. UMS says Europeans will not be hurt. It's the U.S. citizens who are going to be hurt now that the EU, India, Russia, and China have the U.S. in their rearview mirrors. And then finally, Kamito says the EU is signing a free trade agreement with India, according to the EU President Ursula von der Leyen. This shows that Europe wants to diversify beyond the U.S. and China. You know what? You're right. I should have pointed that out. I stand corrected. Thank you, Mr. Kamito. Good for you and good for both of them for this deal. It's an important deal. So, as usual, feedback is appreciated. I'm on YouTube. You can check me out at Journalistically Speaking. Don't hesitate to tell me what you think, whether you agree with me or disagree with me. We're trying to be as democratic as we can here. Also, look for me on X and soon to be other platforms, exciting platforms. On X, you can find me at Rick Sanchez TV, and there's a lot of talking going on there. We will be looking for you next time. Thank you so much for letting us into your home.